What I didn't realize when we started this business is you really need to involve your lender upfront. If you're going to send an LOI out, you really need to understand the market and what the lenders are doing in that market to maximize your leverage or where your leverage point is going to be, because it changes your underwriting. If I have to raise another $1 million, that's going to change the entire dynamic of the deal from an equity position versus a debt position.
Welcome to the Free From Wall Street podcast, where we share how we have done over $200 million in real estate deals to create, preserve, and pass on generational wealth without the roller coaster ride of the stock market. If you're ready to start investing with purpose, visit freefromwallstreet.com. But for now, let's dive into this episode.
Today we're talking about lending because we are right at the finish line of closing our 120 unit property out in Greenville, Texas. And it has been a little bit of a challenge. I think some of you might have seen some Facebook Lives that we've been doing and talking about some of this stuff. But lending in the commercial real estate world is predicated very much on income. So unlike the single family space or the residential space, some of you may or may not know, that these loans are typically non-recourse loan. We do Fannie Mae or Freddie Mac 10-year, 12-year loans. Sometimes we'll get a year or two of interest-only payments, but they're non-recourse loans, which means although I have to personally sign on the loan and I have to have the personal financial statement to carry the debt load, outside of doing anything illegal or bad, what they call bad boy carve-outs, the property is getting underwritten more so than we are getting underwritten. So the bank is looking at this and saying, okay, so you have your net operating income. Here's your expenses. Here's what the market is trading at cap rate wise. And this is the value that we put on that. And then they tell us what the proceeds amount is based on that particular area. Dallas is a great area. This is just outside of Dallas. So we're getting about 80% leverage, plus they're giving us a little bit of CapEx in the loan. But it's all predicated on one thing, which is the net operating income has to be where we say it was when we contracted the property. So this is where we ran into a little bit of a hiccup over the last couple of months. 120 unit deal. We contracted it 4 months ago, 3 months ago, and we were at 96% occupancy. Now we went down there, we did our due diligence, we looked at the lease audits, and we saw that we had about 15 or 20 leases coming due during the time that we'd be under contract. So those units are gonna have to get turned, and new tenants are going to have to come in. So we're going to have to evaluate those new tenants with the current ownership, approve those new tenants, and then get them paying. So just things to look out for, right? When you're under contract is you have these new tenants coming in. Who's underwriting them? Are they just sticking any warm body in there? Or are they going to underwrite to a specific metric, right? Certain credit score, certain income level, stuff like that. So that's just something that you have to work out in your contract. In our contracts, we also have a 90% economic occupancy requirement, which means 90% of the tenants have to be there and paying on time. Otherwise, the seller's not fulfilling their contractual liability. That hinges very much on the lending piece of it. If Fannie Mae comes in and says, well, you're only getting 85% of the tenants that are paying, we're not going to lend you as if 90% were. So just a lot of contractual things that you need to think about up front. And here's where we're at. The trailing 3 months, which is what the bank looks at to see, they call it the T3, what's the trailing 3 months of income and expenses look like so you can get your net operating income. Well, instead of 15 or 20 tenants turning, we had 30 tenants turn in August. We didn't get the August financials until the very, very end of September, first week of October, actually. And then we got the September financials right after that. So the problem was we had this big turnover in August, so you saw a dip in income. And then September, it started to claw itself back a little bit, but the bank threw a flag on the play and said, you're supposed to be at 90 economic occupancy. If you blend these last 3 months, it's only at 87%. And, you know, so now we're talking to the seller and saying, well, let's make sure that the economic occupancy is where it needs to be. And they're running reports. I mean, today's October 30th. We were getting reports up until last night, showing that October has now stabilized above that 90, it's like 94% now, right? So we're just going back and forth with the lender to make sure that, because here's the deal. If proceeds were going to get slashed based on the new income, it means we would have to come to the table with another $300,000 or $400,000. It's just not ideal to have to go either raise or put in another $300,000 or $400,000 you know, the week of closing. So we're sitting on the capital from our investors that's in escrow. We're waiting on closing. And then they start throwing wrenches in the loan proceeds saying, well, we're not going to give you $8.1 million. We're going to give you $7.75 million. And, you know, I was talking to one of our investors and said, well, how can they cut the loan by that much? It's a significant amount. And it is. But if you look at $2,000 or $3,000 a month in income, in net operating income, you multiply that out by 12 months. Now you're looking at $24,000 to $36,000 in net operating income that's gone. And you divide that number by the cap rate that you're buying it at. Let's just call it a 5.7% cap rate. I think that's what this was going in. Then you are talking about $300,000 or $400,000 in value, right? Which is why we love to buy these properties, because you can create value by creating more net operating income based on reducing expenses and increasing income. So every $20,000 or $30,000 a year, you're looking at an additional $300,000 or $400,000 in value. So to move the needle long term, it's not extremely difficult to do that, but it cuts both ways, right? Now we have to deal with that in loan proceeds. So anyway, we finally got all of the paperwork back from the seller. We've compiled it in a way that is making sense to the lender. And we are getting our loan proceed amount today, which looks good. It looks like it's back to where we needed it to be. And we should be closing over the next 5 days or so. So all good news, but things that you have to look at with these lenders, right, is making sure that you're bringing enough equity to the table. You're making sure that you're securitizing yourself in the contract so that if something dips, it becomes a lender issue. And the reason that that's important is because we have a mortgage contingency clause in the contract that we write. So we're securitized a few ways. One, with the economic occupancy. Two, with the lender clauses. And, you know, this market's very hot right now. I know a couple of operators that are actually writing contracts without any mortgage contingency clauses, even though they plan on getting mortgages, because they're confident in the deal, they're confident in their ability to get the loan. But look, in this COVID environment, nothing is guaranteed, right? I'm not putting $250,000 up in hard money earnest deposits without a mortgage contingency, because things are changing day to day. And, you know, it's an election cycle, we're a week away from the election. It's volatile, and markets are volatile. That means that the treasuries are volatile. It means that, you know, anything can happen. So you just need to protect yourself and your investors. So when you're making sure that you're writing these contracts, make sure you have lender clauses in there. Make sure you have economic occupancy clauses in there. And as you continue to get down the road, make sure you're getting all of these updates in a timely fashion. That was part of the issue, was we got August and September financials basically at the same time. So the expectation was that it was going to stay the same, but we had this big blip, and now we needed to go through everything. 2,000 pages or more is what Lighthouse had to go through, our asset management partner, to really determine what was going on there. So it's a little bit of a dance with these lenders. They're constantly moving the needle a little bit. You know, the rate is 3.5%, and it looks like it's gone down a little bit. So now it's going to go to 3.45%, which will increase proceeds a small amount as well. So it's never an exact science, and you really don't know the exact proceed number, and you don't know the exact equity number until probably like the week of closing. So, I mean, it's all a matter of pro forma, and we had the right numbers up front, and they're getting a little bit better. So that's good news for us, and it's good news for our investors, because the lower the leverage, or the higher the leverage, the more cheap money you have in the deal. I mean, 3.5%, 3.45% on a 120 unit building it's a great rate. It's like what I have on my residential house. So if you guys have any questions about what we're doing with these lenders, I mean, what I didn't realize when we started this business is you really need to involve your lender up front. If you're going to send an LOI out, you really need to understand the market and what the lenders are doing in that market to maximize your leverage, or where your leverage point is going to be, because it changes your underwriting. If I have to raise another $1 million, that's going to change the entire dynamic of the deal from an equity position versus a debt position. So just really important to engage your lender, have a good, knowledgeable lender on your team that's going to be able to tell you, you know, what's a good metric to underwrite to, what's he typically seeing in that market, and how are you going to help get to the right number so that if it changes later on, you're still able to do the deal. And, you know, something else that we learned through this process is, you know, we're trying to make sure that we're not playing defense. So I think a lot of people in the beginning will start to do these deals and they'll start to play defense. They'll wait until they get a request from the lender versus proactively trying to find out what the lender needs. So on this deal and moving forward, we have lender checklists internally that we know that they're going to need. So as we start collecting information for the seller from our own due diligence, we're copying that information and putting it into a lender folder that we share with the lender when we get under contract. And that helps us because then they don't have to request all of these things and we're scrambling around for it. I mean, a lot of this business is preparation. It's not, you know, I think in any business you can play defense and kind of run around ragged and try to just get stuff done, but that doesn't create a lot of peace in your life. So what we're trying to do is really understand from the onset, what do we need for all of these different pieces? And there's a lot of moving parts. You have title, you have attorneys, you have legal, you have private placement memorandums, you have state filings to create the new LLCs in every state for every deal that you do. And then you have all the lender checklists, and then you have the equity, and you have the investors, you know, so there's a lot of moving pieces, but you know, they say an ounce of preparation versus a pound of cure. So we're just process mapping all of these things up front. So we know exactly what we need from the onset. And then we have this checklist that's rolling and we know, hey, we need updated financials for this. We need updated P&L statements for this. And it's really starting to help streamline that process because we're not caught off guard as to when they start asking for things. And work with your lender, talk to your lender, talk to the seller, make sure that everybody's on the same page about, you know, what type of information you're going to need and what kind of time frame is it reasonable to get those, that information over to your lender and stuff like that. So you're not scrambling around, right? I mean, there's enough to do to where creating that franticness doesn't help. So that's just kind of some of the takeaways and some of the lessons that we learned with lending recently. So, you know, just to recap, one, engage them early, find out what your leverage point should be and raise to that and underwrite to that. And then if it changes, be prepared for some of those changes. Make sure that you have economic occupancy requirements in your contract. Make sure you have a lender clause in your contract. And as you get closer to the wire, have contingency plans. What are you going to do if you need to raise more money? What are you going to do if they increase the proceeds amount? I mean, you know, so just have some of those contingency plans, understand what it looks like from the onset. As we get closer, we're updating our investors every week. We just do these weekly videos, letting them know, hey, this is what's happened this week. This is why we haven't closed. And a couple of our investors reached out to us this week and they said, hey, we're really appreciative that you guys are going through this because the seller's telling us that the numbers shake out and they look like they do, but we want to make sure that we're not deploying capital into a deal that's different than what it was last week or 3 months ago when we contracted it. So it's just doing due diligence, make sure that our capital is going into exactly what we thought it was going to go into and protecting ourselves, protecting our investors, protecting the deal. And on this one, it got a little hairy at the end, but it all shook out and the numbers are right exactly where we need them to be. And we'll get this thing closed in the next couple of days. But learning lessons, right? We're always learning. And here's the other caveat is every lender is different. So Fannie requires different stuff than Freddie, requires different stuff than bridge lenders, requires different things than Arbor, KeyBank, you know, so we're starting to create this kind of rolling list every time we do a deal with a new bank of what their requirements are going to be so that we're prepared for the next deal that we do so that we make sure that we have all the information that we need given to them. So anyway, hope this is helpful. Hope it gives you a little bit of a peek behind the curtain as to what we're dealing with on the day-to-day basis. It's not just contract these things and go get to closing. There's a lot of moving pieces, a lot of moving parts. And if these numbers shift just a couple thousand bucks, it can cost you hundreds of thousands of dollars in a loan amount. So all good stuff, all good learning lessons. And, you know, so we're excited to get this thing closed. Our nonprofit is ready, willing, and able to start accepting some checks. As you guys know, the Invest with Purpose ethos is we partner with the nonprofit on every single deal that we do to create some passive income for them as well as our investors. And it's cool. You just did some numbers and it looks like we'll be able to give almost $1 million through the deals that we've done in the last 24 months to these nonprofits that we've partnered with over the next 5 years or so. So it's amazing that these deals are able to create the amount of passive income that it is for these nonprofits and help them out too. So if you're interested in learning more, make sure you're reaching out to us, Stephen@integrityhg.com. You can go to freefromwallstreet.com as well and just sign up. Give us all your information. We'll get in contact with you. We'll see if it's a good fit. And, you know, we'll let you know about some future opportunities that we have. So thanks for tuning in to Free From Wall Street. We'll catch you guys next time. Make sure you put those lender clauses in your contracts.
Thanks for listening to the Free From Wall Street podcast. If you like what you hear, leave us a rating and review and let us know what you think.